Can we all just say the prayer of God grant me the confidence of a mediocre white man?
Looking at the media, how they portray Arab women. That helpless woman.
And their
blind eyes. Very submissive. Yeah,
very submissive.
Usually a third wife.
Yeah.
We don't have that in Tunisia. No polygamy.
In Egypt, it's permissible. But how often does it even happen?
Who has the money? The censorship is what bugs me. If you write
closer account.
Yeah.
In a lot of different cultures and religions, when it comes to dating, why is it that women have to stay virgins?
And if you don't, the honor of the family is in question.
A lot of people think that maybe there isn't enough feminism because of the religion.
The situation of women being scrutinized has been going on for hundreds of years. We still see a woman as a body, not as a mind.
Having you girls is just amazing.
You did give us a little piece of home, and you grouped all the uncivilized people
together.
We all
did. Thank you.
Joining us today on Moving Radio is director, writer, and producer of the brand new documentary that's about to come out on April 10th. It's called Arab Women Say What? Nisreen Baker is our guest today, and we're talking about Arab Women Say What? Because the online launch for this film is a full-length documentary on April 10th. You're going to be able to catch it for free on the NFB website. God, what a resource that is, the nationalfilmboard.ca. Nisreen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Christine, for having me. Thank you.
Well, we love talking to directors that have a lot of different things to say, and this film definitely encompasses that. And I thought it was an incredible experience for myself, because I felt like I was in the room with these women. And we'll kind of get to that and how this film really, you know, connects with its audience and also connects you to so many other different women and their experiences. You know, this thing has taken you 5 years to make, which is kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, that's what happens sometimes, especially with documentary films, in creating Arab Women Say What? So it embodies the essence of kind of living between two worlds, speaking and dreaming in different languages and lands. So before we kind of get into really breaking the film down a little bit and your experience with it, can you give the audience a sense of what to expect from the documentary when they log on to nfb.ca on April 10th?
Expect to have a lot of fun with those women. Expect shocking views and perspectives. Expect boldness. Straightforward, you know, say it like it is, women speaking their minds, which to many is a surprise that Arab women could speak that candidly and freely. Expect to get hungry because of the last portion of the film, delicious food. Expect to listen to some Arabic music. There's a bit of singing that happens. And expect to be part of the family. This is our invitation as Arab women to our larger community, whatever the background may be, to come in, join us, let's have a conversation. And definitely, as an Arab tradition, we need to feed you. So let's have some food.
You've hit so many of the things that were feelings for me in watching your film. And what I really appreciated about it was the level of intimacy that you and these women had in these conversations. Talk to us a little bit about where the seeds of the idea for even making this a film in itself came from. And then we can kind of get into, you know, the pitfalls of COVID and stuff like that. Like, where was the main inspiration for you and why you felt like these voices had to be heard? Because unfortunately, we just don't enough.
Since I started making films here in Canada, I consider it my job to give voice to the voiceless, to represent the underrepresented, and to build bridges between cultures. But with this particular film, I was having a conversation at an event at NFB with David Christensen, who was the executive producer at the time. And I was talking about a completely different film. But then we got to talking, and then I was telling David the conversation I had with my friends. Those eight women, they are my friends. We gather often, like at least once a month, we have one of those big gatherings. So I was telling him about the conversation that went on, and David just looked at me and said, that should be your next film. That's a film I'd like to watch. So I started approaching the women, trying to convince them. While we are outspoken, but in front, we're not really familiar with the camera. And of course, there is this distrust between the Arab community at large and media. I mean, we've been called all sorts of names in the media. A lot of misinformation and disinformation about the Arab community is widespread, and nobody even thinks to question that or to challenge that. It just goes without saying. So there's that distance between the community and the media. So it took a bit of convincing. It also took a bit of selection. I run in a much bigger group. We're a much bigger group than the eight people that you see. Many of those women said no in the larger group. So the women that I managed to finally convince to be part of this, I want to say, like, I had to be very, very mindful of who I'm selecting, because the camera has its own presence. And unless somebody can get over that hump of a camera being there, then we won't have a film, right? Nobody's going to talk. So that was the selection part. I also wanted those women to represent their rainbow of cultures and variety we have within the Arab community. So from different Arab countries, because each Arab country has its own dialect, its own food, its own way of being. Yet there are, you know, common things that makes us all say, oh, we're Arabs, you know, Arab Canadians. But the variety within that, the variety of perspectives, how they view themselves, do they view their own religions, their own beliefs. So I wanted to bring the spectrum of what it is being an Arab to our Canadian audience. Of course, at that point, I was thinking that it's going to be the conventional way. You know, we'll get the DOP, second camera person, the sound people, and we'll go and we'll interview and this and that and the next thing. But then COVID.
But you didn't even look at that as necessarily being a hurdle. Like you still powered through that, as you know, like many of us, we found ways to connect and you finally get through that. So, I mean, it was a small part of the film, but I felt like it didn't overshadow everything. It just kind of punctuated maybe in some of the ways that these women talk about and yourself about this idea of feeling that isolation, sometimes from family. Sometimes from culture, and that kind of amplified it a little bit. So I felt like it was kind of just like another layer of understanding that I felt like an audience member should be like, understand, like we all went through something like that. And that's just something that anybody who immigrates from another place and has to leave their family and culture behind should feel too. And I thought you did a wonderful job of making that universal for the audience.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, I viewed it as such. I think very odd to say, but COVID was a lucky break. Because first of all, we documented the time, and it's something that unified everybody wherever you are on planet Earth at that time, because everybody went through lockdown at one point or another. Every country, I mean, worldwide. Of course, us Canadians here, we shared that time together, and people started, you know, visiting online, visiting using Zoom. Cody, the producer, called me and said, well, you know, lockdown, we're shutting down production. And I said, well, how about we document the time? And we had that conversation where, you know, what do you mean? Well, how about we record the Zoom? To her credit, to NFB's credit, they indulged that out-of-the-box idea and said, well, this is a first. You know, write it down. You know, we'll present it to headquarters and whatnot and get the approval. And they did. So we started recording the Zoom gatherings. And then, but we also wanted to get up close and personal with the women. NFB thankfully sent 8 phones out for the women to film themselves. And of course, I get the phone call. What is this? What do you want me to do with this? Why are you sending me a phone? And he said, well, you're going to film yourself. And like, and how do I do that? Well, of course, the challenge was that they have to film themselves with the phone flipped. So they're not really looking at the phone screen. They're rather looking at the phone camera. So they can't place themselves in frame or not. Also, 8 women, different professions. So I did a course on Zoom on lighting, camera angle, and sound and whatnot, which was fun, just for those women. And, you know, of course, we collected those footage, you know, touchless. So wiping the phone, putting on the doorsteps. Our great editor Hans would come, take the phone, wipe it off, you know, upload, wipe it again, put it on the doorstep. It was a production. And it, in and of itself, it needs the making of documentary. So that went on, but that also gave the women the opportunity and gave me the opportunity to step back as a director and follow their lead, which is very new in my career. You know, directors are always asking questions, choosing camera angles and whatnot. The women's opportunity was that they became the narrators of their own story. I'm no longer asking them questions. I'm not sitting, you know, in front of them saying, so what do you think of that? Or how about this? They're now telling us whatever they want us to know about them, which is retrospective when I think of it. This is it. This is giving people a voice. Rather than me asking the questions, they're telling us what they want to tell us. So that, in that sense, COVID was definitely a lucky break, although some very, very unfortunate things happened, you know, with Sana losing her dad, myself losing my dad, and 2 weeks later, my brother. So it was very, very tough. But all of us, NFB, the women, myself, we kind of pushed through it all together, supporting one another. And for that, I am eternally grateful for the NFB and for those women, because it wasn't easy.
We're speaking to Nisreen Baker, director, writer, and producer of the documentary film, Arab Women Say What? And it launches online on nfb.ca April 10th. You'll all be able to check it out for free. It's a feature-length documentary. It's an excellent piece of filmmaking, but also, you know, like much of the stuff on NFB, it is enlightening on several different levels as opposed to simply just an entertainment vehicle. Nisreen, you know, we've talked a little bit about these women that are part of this group in general, and the film does an excellent job of really kind of introducing you to each one of them and their unique background and their own experiences too, through their own words. But maybe we can just give the audience a little taste of who maybe some of these women are, because I know it would be very time intensive to be like, I can go through every single one of them. And then I'm like, oh, poor Nisreen, I've made you answer a question that took you 40 minutes to answer. So maybe just letting the audience know like who some of these women are, because you're based in Edmonton. So a lot of these women are from here.
Yes, the majority of those women are from here, except for our dear musician, Aya, who is, moved to Calgary. So she's now from Calgary, but we're still friends and she still comes and visits. And when we go, we see her. So the women are from Egypt, from Morocco, from Tunisia, from Iraq, and a minority within Iraq that's a Kurdish Iraqi lady, Laylan. And then we have Aya, who is Druze Syrian. And that's also another minority. And we have Teresa, who is Christian Sudanese. And that's also a minority. And they are spontaneous, outspoken, We have from PhD to, you know, bachelor degree, holding women, pharmaceutical studies, IT, what have you. So a variety of, I thought, would be a representative variety of air women. The choice of bringing all those ladies together, we have Sana from Morocco and Nedra from Tunisia, and different, you know, perspective, different ways. Like we see a conversation between Carmen from Egypt and, no, I think it was Nermin from Egypt and Nedra, where, you know, they're talking about, oh, polygamy, and Nedra would say, it's not allowed in Tunisia, it's not allowed. So you see, within the Arab community, there is those who allow that and those who don't, right? The women are definitely outspoken, definitely friendly, definitely funny. They make fun of each other. They're not, they don't take themselves seriously. And they're, as Nermin said, amazing cooks, incredible cooks.
You know, I feel like any film that I watch, in some ways, I mean, it informs me to, like, maybe to see somebody else's different point of view, or in a way to kind of look at something, or to be like, open my eyes to maybe have something different that I wouldn't have necessarily seen before, particularly when we talk about the, you know, the essence of what a documentary is. But even for yourself as a filmmaker, I think each one of these projects that you make takes you a step forward creatively and also personally as a director. So what did you feel like you got out of this process from being part of this group, and then going through and living with the footage and helping to edit it and seeing it through to finally on April 10th, when the entire nation is going to be able to see it?
I think the biggest takeaway for me for this film in particular, just because it was something that I've never done before. I have never directed a documentary virtually where people are on Zoom, and there is no way for me to say, you know, cut, or, you know, can we do another take? No, it is what it is. This is it. Relinquishing that control as a director was an opportunity for growth. Most of the films that I've done before, I am drawn to observational or fly on the wall style documentaries, and that's how I've done my previous one. But still, I was always in the room. This one, yeah, we were locked down, no place to be in the room. And then when it came time to actually film the last scene, which is the physical gathering, which was the first time we all saw each other, because it was right at the cusp of, you know, lifting of the restrictions, I made a conscious decision to stay in the control room, which was Nedra's dining room, because we filmed at Nedra's house. And I didn't want to be on the floor with the camera ladies and the sound people and all that, because I simply didn't want the women to, I didn't want my presence, physical presence, to alter their views. I didn't want them to second guess themselves, thinking, oh, Serene's here, she's my friend, should I say that or shouldn't I say that? So I just hid in the control room and had communicated with my DOPs and sound people with an earpiece, you know, go tight here, pull back, you know, give me the wide, all those beautiful terminologies. But I really did not want to be in the room with them. I wanted to leave them to their own devices to discuss what they want to discuss, to be themselves. And again, yet another lucky break is this was their first meeting after the opening. So they had not seen each other for 2 years. And I really was worried, because Nedra's living room had 3 cameras and 2 sound people and a bunch of light, as you would on a set. So I was concerned that the women would come in and look at all the, you know, all those equipments and just freeze. But because it was the first time they see each other, they got busy with each other and forgot about all those cameras here and there and lights. And I don't know, they just got busy with each other, which was incredible, incredible. And yet, naturally, when they sat together, as we all are in this community, we are highly political. And it was just the beginning of the unfortunate war in Ukraine. So that was center of mind. So yeah, that was the first thing they started discussing. And then it got really, really political and, you know, discussing colonialism, discussing Palestine and what's been happening in Palestine for 75 years. And I do get this question quite a bit, where how did they know? The women talked about Gaza. How did they know? This was last April, not last April, the April before that. Oh my God. So yeah, how did they know this was going to happen? And it's they didn't have a crystal ball. This is an ongoing thing. Every other year we are in the same spot, except that this year it's on a much bigger scale. It's disastrous. It's disastrous. Again, the silver lining is a lot of people's eyes have been open to the reality of what's happening. All the facades are being dropped and we're getting to the core of it. We're getting to the core of the issue. Thank goodness for, you know, social media or whatever you call that, the digital world that we live in, because things are caught in real time. You see it in real time. And the question becomes, what do you want to do with it? Are we just going to sit and wait for it to come here? Or are we going to say never again means never again?
Well, you know, one of the things that you'd mentioned earlier in our conversation too, and I think is really apparent when you watch the film, is that you say that we're all friends at this point. And so, you know, when you're a director, sometimes, you know, you may see people as a subject and have to keep that outside eye, but that must have been really difficult to do. So even more importantly is the end product itself of the film, and like what this all these years of work not only meant to you, but means to these women, because they're such a direct part of it. So tell us a little bit about what that experience was like when you were able to finally share it with these women and how they all felt about it.
Yes, that was nerve-wracking that day, because, you know, we spent, oh my God, we must have spent a year and a half in the editing room trying to piece this film together. And then came the private screening for the participants. And I was just shaking, because they signed on to this project because of the trust they put in me. And the promise was, I will not censor you. I will give you a voice. I will not manipulate what you say to present you in a bad light. Who you are is going to show. And that's quite a bit of a promise, right? Yeah, that day I was really, really nervous. And then started, you know, at the National Film Board office, there's a screening room. We had the 8 women. They're watching. When it ended, I couldn't even look at them. I was like, okay, what's going to happen now? But they really liked it. They really liked it. They agreed with what they saw. They felt that it truly represented them. And I'm really happy that it does. I really am. Again, because for so long, for years and years and years, decades, the Arab community at large was misrepresented. And there's a lot of disinformation about the Arab community. And Arab women were truly, truly misrepresented, you know, oppressed, wearing the headscarf because she's oppressed, uneducated. I'm not sure where is that assumption come from. Where did that assumption come from, that if somebody's wearing a headscarf, they're uneducated? Why? Why would that be the assumption? So a lot of assumptions about the community, that we are a monolithic community. As Teresa said, many people don't know that we have not only Christians within the Arab community, we have Jewish people within the Arab community, we have Druze, we have other religions. Each of the religions has their own denominations within that. And yeah, we're still all together. And of course, you know, on the spectrum of political perspective, we range from conservative to really, really liberal. So by no means are, and I guess the idea is, we're no different than the next community you come across in Canada, than the Ukrainian community or the Latin American community, or, you know, the Southeast Asian community or the European community. We do carry that range. We have that variety. So cornering us into the human animal terrorist group, the designated terrorists of the world, no. No, that doesn't fly, because, and it shouldn't, and it should be challenged. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly in every community. So putting the spotlight on the minority that doesn't represent the entire community, and then painting everybody with the same brush, that's very unfortunate. And I hope this film and other films that I've made open a window to a better conversation.
Yeah, the film we've been talking about today with Nasreen Baker is Arab Women Say What. You can check it out on nfb.ca on April 10th. Nasreen, I know NFB does a fantastic job of always making sure that when you click on their films, they give you lots of information about the director. They give you some information about how the film was made. Sometimes they'll even include press kits, depending on what happens there, or interviews that link there. So they're a fantastic resource before the film even comes out online, where you can learn a little bit about Nasreen and the film itself. Is there another way that maybe an audience member listening to this now really kind of connects with what you're talking about? How else that they maybe can reach out and connect with yourself or the film?
Well, definitely the film, the National Film Board website, www.nfb.ca. And if they just put the title of the film in the search, there's so much information about the film on the National Film Board website. And of course, on the 10th of April, they can even watch the whole film. And connecting with me, I'm on social media. Though a word of warning, I am still very new to social media. So I'm finding my way around it.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time, and I really appreciate the film. I think it is an incredibly illuminating look at how people genuinely feel, and to see these conversations that happen in living rooms and kitchens and homes, and talk about the things that are really present and matter to these women. And as somebody who lives on the outside of that, as even just a viewer, I find myself learning so much about the feelings of these women and the experiences they go through, that it makes you richer for it after 80 minutes of watching it. So I highly encourage you to click on nfb.ca, check out Arab Women Say What. And you know what else is great too? I went on the website again today, and they have like a whole category, so that even if you want to dig a little bit deeper, there's like Muslim female directors and all kinds of other documentaries related to what you've done and some other people that have created stuff within Canada, which is amazing too.
Yes. The National Film Board website is an incredible resource. The heritage of it all, you can go back decades and decades and kind of chronicle the history of Canada with it. And the variety of voices they bring to the Canadian viewer. So, you know, and of course, needless to say, their productions won and have been nominated and won Oscars and other awards. So definitely, yes, the National Film Board website, I would recommend it to everybody.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Nasreen. And thank you so much for this film, Arab Women Say What. Check it out April 10th on nfb.ca.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you.